part of the house to a roof in the new plan, brings it very close to the property line. The roof porch is part of a stucco design of the front of this house and cannot be taken off. Therefore, there's no room for a driveway getting back to this new garage. The result is that the existing house will no longer match the frontages of the other Section 8 houses immediately to the north. It's extremely close to and now on an angle to the proposed front alignment for the new house. The new plan also will require the demolition of the left front side room of the applicant's own house in order to meet setbacks. This creates new and unusual crowding on that side of the house. The new house is proposed to be 35 feet tall, and both the existing houses are simple two-story structures. What happens to the driveways and off-street parking? Who can tell? It's impossible to see that a driveway can accompany the Clark's house anymore, even though they propose to demolish the garage and put a new one up. There is simply not enough room between this stucco part of the house and the side lot line. The houses in both Section 8 and Section 4 of Oak Ridge Avenue have driveways and garages. A couple of them have converted the garage into living space, but they all have parking pads. The contour of the land between these two existing houses, and you can see on your drawing there's a bit of a point there, has required, and the curve goes down between the two houses, it's required retaining walls on the Clark's property, which the new builder says he will remove. What is the effect on stormwater drainage? The new plan creates storm drain problems. The disturbance and removal of the trees will further strain the antiquated and already overloaded storm drain system at the low points of the lots. You'll notice in my first paragraph I told you I, too, have suffered flooding because I'm the low point at the cul-de-sac there. I'm one of the low points. There's an email, which I actually have but failed to copy for you, from the town manager to Paul Folkers, the assistant CAO of County Executive Duncan, describing the town residents experiencing concerns about storm drainage and saying that these drains are antiquated and overloaded. The town council requested that you postpone the hearing until November 17th, and I believe that there was very good reason for that, and I would urge you to honor that request. And if not, to deny this application today because it simply creates an overcrowded condition that does not exist. It requires the demolition of both of the parts of both of the existing houses, and it puts a driveway that I suppose goes across the front yard of the proposed new house. The only way it could be there would be to be coming across the new house's front yard. None of the other houses have that, and then going down in between the two houses into the back. So there will not be, any kind of harmony with the way that works. Thank you very much for your attention to the matter.
Thank you. Mary Pat Curry.
Thank you very much. My name is Mary Pat Koehlig. I'm here representing myself and my husband. We live at 7106 Oak Ridge Avenue, which is located diagonally across from the proposed re-subdivision. We are lot number 8, just to the south of Curtis Road. I have submitted formal comments for the record. We oppose the proposed re-subdivision. And I'd like to also note that even though we submitted a letter last December stating our opposition to the initial proposal, we did not receive further notification about the hearing that was planned on October 7th. And I find it very interesting that even though we are included on this plat as a confronting neighbor, for some reason we don't qualify as a confronting neighbor in order to receive notification, and I would ask that the board look into that matter so that it's consistent.
What lot number are you? I'm sorry.
We're lot number 8. Okay. So we were included in this plat, but we never got any formal notification for either the first or the second. In addition to our general concerns about increasing the density of housing over what is currently at this location and thereby negatively affecting the quality of the neighborhood, we have concerns that the commission staff have not followed their own procedures in recommending approval of this re-subdivision in their preliminary approval dated October 15th. The brochure on how to participate in the subdivision process specifically states that among the relevant issues that residents and associations can and should submit written comments on are whether existing and programmed public facilities are adequate to support and service the proposed subdivision. In arriving at its recommendation, there is no mention of the environmental impact relating to traffic and circulation and whether existing and programmed facilities such as stormwater drainage are adequate given recent flooding in our community. We are concerned about the precedent this might have on future re-subdivisions. In a 1990 ruling, the Commission disapproved a proposal for re-subdivision because Section 5020B of the Code counseled that a building permit may not be approved for construction of a dwelling which is located on more than one lot or crosses a lot line unless the new structure is to be located on a lot created by a record plat. We would like to know, how does the current plan address this requirement? The two proposed properties for re-subdivision are in two different sections of Chevy Chase. The property owners at 7205, I understand it's now part of the public record, are selling their property for $350,000 in order to create a new lot for development. If this re-subdivision is approved, it will encourage developers to target other property owners and sell off pieces of property to stuff in more houses wherever they can. We have environmental concerns regarded to water drainage that was already mentioned and documented traffic problems as evidenced by our traffic control signs and speed bumps. And if I may, we have the property owner at 7201 Oak Ridge submitted a number of letters in support of the re-subdivision, and I hope that you will carefully review those addresses. The owner at 4303 Curtis Street is not living at that address because his home is currently under construction, and the owners at 7111 Oak Ridge Avenue, who initially opposed the re-subdivision, have sold their house, and they will be leaving the community at the end of October. Our home is across the street from the proposed re-subdivision.
I'm sorry, your time is way up, and we appreciate your contribution. David Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Perkins. I'm a retired civil engineer. I live at 7206 Maple Avenue, lot number 54, in the town of Chevy Chase, Section 4. And it is the lot, one of three lots, that is directly to the east of the property to be proposed to be developed. I thankfully acknowledge Norb Halloran's offer of 3 minutes of his time to me. The high point of the property on Oak Ridge is approximately 30 feet higher than the high point on the Maple Avenue side. In between, there is a valley which has been described as a swale, and also a buried storm drain. That swale and storm drain are entirely on my property. And the question of notification, it has been alleged before and also today at this meeting that notification was given to the town and the adjoining and confronting property owners in August. I don't know about the town, but I did not receive any notification in August, and I'm not aware of any property owner that did receive it at that time. The notice that came to me was on September 29th, I believe, in the form of the Planning Commission's one-page notice of the October 7th meeting. And then on October 1st, I received a letter from the developer's engineer, Macris Hendricks Glasscock, and that had been hand-delivered to the wrong address the day before. This plan is a new plan. The one that was submitted late last year was different. It was by a different developer. The property lines were different. There were many different aspects of design. I believe it should have been designated as a new plan. The decision by the staff to call this a revision, which carries with it no legal notification requirement to adjacent and confronting property owners, was in effect a decision to minimize the opposition. The engineering drawing by Macris and Hendrickson Glasscock has been revised without giving revision number and date to the drawing, which is a customary practice when preparing engineering drawings. Apparently, the engineer was allowed to submit a revision late in the period. The change that I noted most flagrantly, it was a change from the roof drains of the new house being routed to four dry wells. They changed that to being collected and connected to a storm drain. That revised drawing was not in the Planning Commission's file on October 5th when I examined it, but it was there on October 15th when I examined it again. The location of the large diameter storm drain is wrong on the drawing, and it was not changed despite my noting that fact in my December 9th, 2003 letter to Development Review Department. The storm drain pipe is not under the property line, as it's shown on the drawing, but it's entirely on my property, about 10 to 12 feet east of the property line. And I know this personally because about 20 years ago, after getting no action from Montgomery County to address the problem of subsidence in my lot due to infiltration into that pipe, I dug a dry well to try to collect the water. And in the process of digging the dry well, I discovered the side of that large diameter concrete pipe. The fact that a connection, the proposed connection from this new development to the large diameter storm drain, which is on my property, would have to traverse my land, that fact has never been addressed. The new house, with its attendant paving, the cutting of trees, the disturbing of ground cover, all will hasten the stormwater runoff and erosion down the hill, which will end up in my yard. As it is, every large storm produces a pond in my yard. This plan will only make it worse, and the pond surface will become higher. Evidence from a recent flooding upstream on other Oak Ridge properties suggests that the storm drainage system is not adequate. There are other speakers that will address that flooding problem. The adequacy of the existing system should be evaluated and corrected before any new construction is allowed to connect into it. This plan, which Jane Lawton referred to, creates three lots out of two, a new house where none existed before, a new lot squeezed in, straddling the original Section 4, Section 8 boundary, half in Section 4, roughly half in Section 8. Policies and precedents, of and which I've been advised, dictate.
Your time is up, I'm sorry. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any questions for this group? I have one question for Jane. You raised a lot of compelling issues, but as I'm sure you're aware, when we do a re-subdivision, we have seven statutory criteria that we have to apply. And the staff has laid out in the staff report how the seven criteria are met. And unless I missed it, I didn't hear you say anything that addressed the seven criteria that we're allowed to address. So I'm not sure how we can incorporate all those other issues that you raised.
Well, there are two issues I would say. First of all, the frontage, I believe, and if you look at your own list of frontages.
Mm-hmm.
This is it, and it shows these proposed lots in the middle. The only lots that are smaller in frontage to this are the radial cul-de-sac lots, of which mine is one, and they don't count it, and the several little lots that are in Section 4. So what we said to you here is this is a meeting, a division line. This property is the dividing line between Section 4 and Section 8, and all of those other Section 8 lots are at least, most of them, the ones immediately adjacent to the north, are 70-foot frontage. All of the Curtis Avenue are 70-foot frontage. So, in my opinion, it doesn't meet that. Secondly, it wouldn't meet setbacks at all in current zoning without the demolition of parts of the structures of the two existing properties.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next group is Howard Benenson, Bruce Russell, and Joseph Rubin. Come on up, Howard Benenson, Bruce Russell, and Joseph Rubin. Mr. Benenson, go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Howard Benenson. I live at 7204 Maple Avenue. That's lot 53, which sits behind the proposed redevelopment, approximately 30 feet below the hill that the Oak Ridge properties are on. I realize I have 6 minutes, and I'll try not to repeat what you've already heard. I'd like to make a couple of points. Number one, we were unaware of a single instance in Chevy Chase where a portion of an existing property that includes a teardown has been purchased to provide required footage to build an extra house. Such rezoning would establish an unfortunate precedent that risks even further deterioration of the town character. And you've heard about a precedent had been set by this commission in turning down a similar proposal on Rosemary and Maple in 1990, file number 1-90064. In that same file number in 1990, this commission cited sitting astride two section lines as one of the factors contributing to the denial of that application. We're particularly concerned about drainage and flooding. Drainage is a particular concern of the residents of Maple Avenue because the Oak Ridge houses, including the proposed new one, sit on a hill approximately 30 feet above us. Further, we are aware of catastrophic and expensive flooding of 7 houses and 3 cars on July 27, 04, in the 6900 block of Oak Ridge, one block down. Dr. Kress of 6906 Oak Ridge wrote a letter you have on file. He couldn't be here today, but sent some pictures of the flooding, and may I present them, or is that out of order?
No, that's fine. Are you going to refer to them in your testimony?
Yes.
Okay, then hand them to the, clerk. Just hand them to me, since the clerk is busy. And I'll hand them out, and you can keep talking.
Okay, I'll refer to them in a moment. Of the errors in the plans and comments by Matt, Chris Hendricks, and Glasscock, those addressing drainage impacts are pertinent. In a letter dated September 30th, 04, Michael Watkins of the Macris firm proposes to mitigate any drainage impacts, this in quote, of the new dwelling by a direct connection via a storm drain from the roof drains directly to the existing storm drains in the rear of the property. Error one, the storm sewer is not in the rear of their property. The catch basin is 18 feet east of the property line, well within our property at 7204 Maple, you've heard, 12 feet at 7206 Maple, and so on down the block to Maple Terrace and then beyond to Leland Street. This area is particularly disconcerting as the Macris engineers spoke with my wife and two workmen as they opened and measured this catch basin. They were clearly aware that they were in our yard and without permission. It's interesting, just a sidelight, that this used to be a stream where the drainage is now. When this development was built in 1929, it started up on Oak Ridge, and Delegate Schweinhout had the storm drains put in. We have, just for interest, and not too good but adequate picture of the actual stream that ran behind from the original brochures of development in 29. And I'd like you to also take a look at this with your permission. Okay. Error two, got 2 minutes. Error two, roof drains do not mitigate any, quote, any impacts, just one. Water would run down the hill as ground runoff into the adjacent lots just as it does now. Perhaps greatest concern, there is no documentation that the storm sewer can handle additional water. You've heard about a memo, exchange of emails between Chevy Chase town manager Todd Hoffman and Paul Folkers, assistant chief administrative officer for Montgomery County. You should have a copy of that. Noting the storm damage I showed you pictures of, Mr. Hoffman states, quote, the storm drains are either antiquated, non-existent in some areas of town, or the catch basins are poorly configured and maintained, end quote. He further points out that residents rightfully feel that there should be some county-based relief and restructuring zoning laws to limit impervious surface lot coverage, end quote. I'd also like to add that I'm one of the people who was not notified, was delivered to Maple Terrace, not Maple Avenue, in this envelope, which has no name, no address, just a number 8 at the bottom. In sum, we request you turn down the proposal and further request the consideration of re-subdivisions in the town of Chevy Chase be placed on hold until the concerns about the storm drains expressed by town manager and citizens can be properly addressed by the county. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Mr. Russell?
My name is Bruce Russell. I'm representing myself and my wife, Jean Charette. We live at 7107 Oak Ridge on Lot 39. I'd like to put this project in context with what's going on our neighborhood. There's an existing project at 4303 Curtis, which is on the corner directly across the street from the subdivision. That project has been dragging out for several months. I can't imagine that it's going to be completed within a required time frame. And it's had a lot of problems with maintenance of trash, water buildup, misplacement of porta-potties, and excessive noise. These are documented by the town. There's also a construction project that's going to start the 1st of November at 4209 Thornapple. 4209 Thornapple is adjacent to Maple Avenue, and it's behind us, and it also backs on this swale. When I look at the construction project with the subdivision on that house plus the two adjacent houses that have to be remodeled, and also we discovered that the owners at 7111 sold to the same developer, their house, that will be renovated. Now we say we have six projects in this little area. Six projects are going to, five of which are going to flow back into that swale, all the stormwater. Now, the other thing that hasn't been mentioned about that swale is that we have a national resonance chamber for sound back there. And it was really acute during Hurricane Isabel because three of the neighbors had generators and we couldn't hear ourselves think. And we had no enforcement by the county because the county doesn't necessarily enforce on the weekends or before hours or after hours. Our concern is enforcement generally because we think it's lax. It's not a documented that there's things that aren't being paid attention to by either the county or the town. But more importantly, we're going to have six construction projects going on simultaneously that's going to bring noise and trash and God knows what else in that area. And on top of that, we've got the cumulative impacts of the stormwater. We don't understand how the planning board and the county deals with the cumulative impacts of this massive reconstruction that's going on inside of Chevy Chase. We're in an area but six construction projects that are going on in our area. But we're being redeveloped all over our community. And we don't understand how the cumulative impacts are being assessed that are leading to drainage problems and flooding just up the street from us. Are we going to be in a floodplain? We're going to have to pay flood insurance? I mean, where is this going to end? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rubin.
Thank you. My name is Joseph Rubin. I live about 3 blocks away. I've lived in the town for 25 years, been married, had kids there. I'm very sensitive to issues of construction and development in the town. The word conflict came up. I'd like to sort of key on that for a minute. We're talking about the creation of a single conforming lot in the R60 zone, which exceeds the requirements of re-subdivision. There's a 40 by 40 footprint proposed, which is well under what would be allowed. As far as drainage goes, every drop of stormwater coming off that house is contained and hard piped into a 52-inch stormwater pipe, which I believe, since the applicant pulled the deeds and found that it's all under an old easement that was originally through WSSC, now controlled by Montgomery County. I mean, we have use of that easement, is my understanding. Back to context, as far as demolition of existing structures, the garage on 7201 already encroaches the lot line by some 4 or 5 feet, and that should be attended to under any circumstances. It happens to be the item that sort of propelled the inspiration to create this lot. As far as any demolition on 7201, that itself was a porch which was enclosed many years ago and it is not really conforming with the original house anyway. The porch on, I'm sorry, that's 7201, that's correct. 7205 is an open porch, and when you look into the code regulations, open porches are allowed to encroach into a side yard, and that is conforming, and nothing needs to be done to the house. The house itself at 7205, the Clark's house. The issue of combining sections 8 and 4, I've only lived in the town for 25 years, but I thought we came under the governance of the town of Chevy Chase. I don't know. That point is lost on me. It seems to be moot. These lots fit. The new configuration of lots is all have correct frontage, and they seem to fit a lot better than what I'm seeing now, these two totally irregular lots. And I might point out that in the event that this is not improved, those lots can handle substantially larger footprints than the applicant has ever conjectured here, with really substantial impact to the environment. If they go through as a matter of right through the building permit process rather than re-subdivision, they can just strip the trees and let the stormwater fall where it may, but the town and the county and the Parks and Planning Commission no longer has oversight over what happens there. I'm very sensitive to what happens in the town. I want it done right. I think this is done right. This is a revision of the existing plan. I refer to my notes in my letter on file.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Questions? Don't see any. Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Bloom, any rebuttal? By you or your representatives? You don't have to.
We'll make it quick. One of the speakers brought up an interesting point in the lot configurations. I think if you look at the record plats and look at lot conformity, the two parcels, or two recorded lots as they are now, are on the periphery of the recorded plats as they were done years ago. So as far as being standard or out of character, I would say that the two existing lots are out of character and that the re-subdivision actually creates a more unified development pattern. I think we can address some of the stormwater issues.
My name is Jim Glasscock, McCreese Hendricks and Glasscock. Regarding the storm drain issues, my office has conducted a study as far as drainage area and pipe size and slope. Based on our findings, the pipe, the 42-inch pipe in that swale, can carry the 10-year storm within, which is the 10-year storm is the requirements of the county. It's my understanding that the flooding that occurred was a structural error or structural problem as opposed to a pipe heading up and heading, causing overflow. My understanding that there was some blockage in one of the structures, which is basically a maintenance issue as opposed to inferior design, if you will. Also, the 10-year, as I mentioned, the 10-year storm is what the county would require to be carried. So for large events, I believe that the end of July was probably a hurricane event. That type of event just is, you just don't design for that type of situation. Thank you.
And really the only thing I want to talk about is the footprint of the property, or the 1,600, it's a 40 by 40 footprint, 1,600 square feet. That is a much smaller footprint than what can be done on the larger lot, which would have impact on everything. And so I feel like I'm doing a good thing rather than a bad thing by subdividing this. And I think, as Bill, our mayor, would attest to, I am one of the sensitive builders in the town of Chevy Chase. I, too, have lived there for 21 years. And, you know, again, all my houses that I do in there are not the mansions that sometimes do happen in the town. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we'll now go to questions, but I want to lead off with a question about notice, because that's kind of a threshold issue. So, starting with the town, when and how did the town of Chevy Chase get notice of this application?
For this revision, our records indicate, and we have in the file, the notice that a plan has been submitted here, and we did, this notice says that a copy of the plan is enclosed, and attached to this notice is the mailing list. And as far as the name of Todd Hoffman, who I believe is the town manager, representing the town of Chevy Chase, 4301 Willow Lane, was properly provided a copy of the plan with a notice that the plan had been submitted to Park and Planning.
What's the date on that?
August 16th, 2004.
August 16th.
Could I ask a question about that? Because this was raised in the testimony, and I'd like to see the notice if I could. You said it's a revision, but one person testified that it's a different applicant. Is it a different applicant?
Yes. This was a new applicant who picked up the application.
It's a new plan.
Revision to the previous plan?
But that's what I don't understand. I don't understand when one case ends and another case
It was an open case. The preliminary plan application was never withdrawn officially by the previous applicant. It was a pending open application.
But it was a new applicant?
A new applicant.
What was it, a new case or new case number, or was it the same case?
We did not assign it a new case number. It was the same physical description of the property, the same boundary, the same property, the same two lots, and a revision to the lot line was done.
But then how would people understand? It seems like people had learned that there was a disposition of the first application. It didn't move forward.
There was never any formal notification that the plan had not moved forward. Simply, a planning board date was never issued for the original plan as submitted.
Well, what is your normal? Let's say nothing else had happened.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody submits a plan, and nothing happens.
Nothing happens.
How do you close out a case?
Staff would note that a plan has languished for over a year, would make contact with the applicant, and ask them to submit a letter that kept the application alive or officially withdrew the application.
But in this case, you don't have the same applicant. So why wouldn't you have sent that letter to the original applicant and say to him, what's your status of your application?
Well, it had not been a year.
Well, no, but you get new information. You get information, you've got a different applicant. So you're not hearing from the old applicant. Doesn't that create ambiguity?
Well, we treated it much like a plan revision, which a typical plan may go through.
But I
understand there was a new applicant. That's why we took it back through the DRC process. We re-noticed it, keeping the same application number. We treated it as if it came in as a new application,
Well, how could you have treated it like a new application if you treated it like a revision? I don't understand that.
Well, it was a revision to the existing application with a new applicant and a modified lot line.
Well, the notice of August 16th that you sent, what plan did it attach?
It attached the
plan we're looking at now.
The new applicant's plan. Essentially the plan you're looking at now.
So the notice of August 16th attached not the old plan. Whatever happened to the old plan, it did not attach that.
It did not attach that.
It did not give the old applicant.
Correct.
It gave the new applicant and the new plan.
Correct.
The testimony from staff is that the notice of August 16th was notice of this item.
Correct.
It may have had the same number as some other.
Well, it did have the same number. Right.
But it wasn't some different plan. It was this plan. This plan notice was given on August 16th.
The city has a different view. Mr. Mayor, which plan did you get?
Well, I have a copy of the August 16th notice right here, sir. And I quote, "A print of the originally submitted plan is enclosed," end quotes. We received the original at that time, not the new plan or the revised plan.
So we have a conflict of testimony, okay?
Well, may I submit this to the record?
Please do. You don't have the plan that was attached by any chance. Why don't you check into that? And we'll let the board members keep asking questions. If you find it, bring it up. Commissioner Wellington, you had the floor.
Well, it was helpful to have Commissioner Perdue's questions, but yeah, that is the sentence. That's why I wanted to see the actual notice, because even assuming you did attach the new plan, when you say, what was the sentence that a copy? Here it says, "A print of the originally submitted plan is enclosed, and the file number is the original file number." So how would one understand that this is a new... I mean, you know, not everybody is up to speed on these things as we are, and I'm having trouble with it, and I'm here. It's my fifth year, and I'm finding it confusing, so I don't understand how someone would understand... that this was a new plan. And you're saying... I'm just asking Rich, yeah.
Granted, this is the notice that you are looking at is a boilerplate noticing that goes out with preliminary plan applications. The term, a print of the originally submitted plan, is to denote that this is the plan as submitted and that this plan will go through revisions, because you'll read the next sentence, which states... clearly that this is the plan as submitted. It's the original plan. The plan will go through revisions, and certainly there's an invitation to visit the file and keep up on the status of the plan.
So it would seem to me the relevant question is whether what was submitted was the plan we're looking at, what people got a copy of was the plan we're looking at now or some other plan.
Mayor has just handed me a plat. Is it your contention that this is what you received?
Yes.
Who's saying yes? We need for the record.
Todd Hoffman, town manager.
Todd Hoffman, town manager, says this is what they got. Huh?
Is this the plan that's before us now?
This is the staff.
If somebody could identify in the record the date or some information from that plat that would...
Take a moment to figure it out.
Yeah, because I'm sure they look quite similar.
For the record, this plan is dated 9/15/03. The name on the plan is the previous applicant, Oak Ridge LC.
So, now, of course, we've just been handed this map. We don't know for sure, but the contention is that this is what was mailed.
Yeah, well, that's my concern, is that we don't know for sure. And it seems to me the point of notice is for people to be clearly on notice of what's going to happen and what the original, as the notice says, the original plan, and it does say in it that there may be revisions. And I'm concerned about the notice, and I think that this hearing has suffered from this issue because we haven't had the kind of discussion that we would have if people had been clearly put on notice and understood what the plan was before them, as opposed to the old plan, which was apparently deficient because it didn't move forward. So one could have looked at this and said, well, hey, this plan was a dead in the water. I don't have to worry about this.
All right. Any discussion of the notice issue before we get to the merits?
Yeah, I have a need for clarification on what I think I'm hearing. What was done, is it any different than what's normally done?
May I first? Well, yes, it was. It is staff's contention that a plan dated July 04 with the new applicant was properly noticed August 16th, 2004. Staff, and the reason I say it was not typical is because staff provided a courtesy revised copy to all adjacent property owners and anyone, any party of record. That is not the normal staff. That is not the normal staff procedure.
Please.
And that revised copies are not typically sent out unless there is a significant revision to the plan.
Right. And while you're speaking, does your file, Indy, show, do you have anything in your file that would suggest that you sent the new plan? We've received an assertion that it was the old plan that was received. Do you have any way of knowing?
I cannot. No. There's not a copy of the plan attached to this notice.
So you don't know for sure.
Just the mailing list.
You don't know for sure.
Michelle Rosenfeld with legal staff, if I might. According to correspondence in the record, both from William Hudnut as well as Joseph Rubin, the town held a public meeting on September 8th, at which point in time it discussed the revised plans. Clearly, before that public hearing, at some point in time, they would have received a copy of those revised plans and consequently have had actual notice of these revised plans for quite some period of time. So, while the record,
if the wrong file was enclosed, they got it originally.
While there may be conflicting testimony about the notice and the attachment, what was actually attached to the August 16th notice, clearly sometime between August 16th and September 8th, the revised plans and
that meeting of that open meeting was September 8th.
According to the two letters in the record, that meeting was held on September 8th of 04.
But that's different from notice of the actual proceeding from an official body, you know, like we are.
Yeah.
That's okay, what you're saying is it turned out they actually did know the real plan is being considered today.
Notice.
That's not the same thing as when we sent out our notice knowing that we've attached the plan that is actually going to be considered by us. That's what we're supposed to be notifying people. I mean, it's supposed to come from us, not from the applicant or hoping that they'll hear about it and then, gee, they did hear about it, so now the notice has been perfected.
However, under our rules of procedure, notice of a hearing date is sent 10 days before the hearing. Notice of a hearing date is not sent prior to that point in time.
But what was this kind of notice called? What would this be called?
This is notice of the fact that there is a plan that has been filed.
Was that required to send notice of that a plan has been filed?
Our rules of procedure require that notice be sent at the time an original application is filed. The purpose for sending this second notification would be because, in the opinion of staff, the plans had changed, and so they were giving notice of those modifications.
However, there's an ambiguity involved in the face of the notice about what was actually sent out, because the language, as I understand it, on the face of the notice is the standard boilerplate language, which in this context is clearly ambiguous. I think we've established that.
However, the next sentence of that notice also provides that these plans may be modified, changed, or updated at any point in time in the process.
I'm troubled by that because that's a boilerplate phrase that says they may be changed, yes. The world may change tomorrow. You know, we may have a miracle somewhere else in the world tomorrow. That's boilerplate language. The issue here is assuming the standard procedure was followed, it was timely. What I think that seems to be established. The issue is what was attached to the notice that was sent out about the revised plan. Yeah. If, in fact, it was the plan that was from September 2003, then that raises an issue that the notice was defective.
Let's be clear what we're talking about here. I haven't heard any indication, or every indication is that legally sufficient notice was provided.
Yes.
There is discussion about whether the legally sufficient notice was really good enough to get everybody notified and to give the town an opportunity to respond, and the board could, as a matter of policy in reviewing the application, if it's concerned that we don't have all the information we could have gotten through the process, that may affect how you want to act on the application. That's why I think it's fine for us to be talking about it. But
I'm not sure that there was legally sufficient.
Well, if you don't think there's legal, let me ask that question directly of counsel, because then it's easy. We stop and we issue, because we're not going to go forward if there has not been legally sufficient notice. So they're still consulting.
What would happen if the
who wants to ask questions of Mr. Weaver while the lawyers
are happen? What I want to ask counsel, what? Let's assume the
look,
following
since counsel's not listening, one of
counsel's not listening.
I hate to actually move to the merits, but I always enjoy procedure so much.
Oh,
it is what I spend the rest of my life on. But turning temporarily to the merits, I'd like to talk about a couple of things. First of all, I want to talk about frontage. I mean, as you all know, we're in a re-subdivision. We have seven criteria. Storm drainage is not one of the criteria. It's not a basis on which we decide this case. Construction burdens is not one of the criteria, and it is not a basis on which we decide this case. But frontage is a criteria. We heard the assertion that this is out of line with others in the neighborhood. So maybe you could, but what would be helpful on this map is if you would actually sketch out on this map, this big map here, if you would draw out the relevant neighborhood and then show me some lots, or you've got, I want it visible here. I know I've got a staff report that shows it, but just so that we're all operating off the same.
You're asking for the defined neighborhood?
I would like you to delineate the neighborhood on that map, and then I would like you to show me whether there are any houses within that delineated neighborhood that have smaller frontages than is proposed here.
Well, Rich Swerhanda, I do think we'll also be wanting to talk about the neighborhood itself, but we can start with the neighborhood that staff and applicant agreed to. But I have some questions about the actual neighborhood delineation.
Okay. So there's a neighborhood delineation that you're recommending.
Correct.
And just for a benefit, what would you explain why there's some things that are kind of carved out? Explain why that's carved out.
Well, this is Mrs. Lawton's lot. It is a part of a lot.
Because she's special.
Long-standing planning board practice not to include parts of lots or lots created by deed within our neighborhood delineations, because we cannot assure that the parts of lots, since they've been changed only by deed, meet all the zoning criteria.
Okay. And then there are those that's an obvious
parts,
why is that?
Parts
those
of lots
parts
also.
Of lots. Okay. Now, within that neighborhood, is there anything? The proposed lots would be approximately 60 feet of frontage.
66, 61, and 60.
Anything in your designated neighborhood that's 60 or less?
Yes.
Give me little check marks or point out something.
Well, for instance, on the same road immediately to the south, this lot is 50, 50, 50. 55, 65.
We have a corner lot, which would be
87. Going to the north, again on the same side of Oak Ridge, 60, 60, 60, 60, 70. So again, from the 70s through the 60s to the 50s and back up to the 60s and 70s. Now, Mrs. Lawton was correct. There are some radio lots here which
right.
we know have narrower frontages.
And then what, the observation is made that the way we get to 60 is with some demolition. Now, my aside from whether the demolition is, I mean, what's coming down, my understanding of the subdivision, the re-subdivision criteria, is that we are looking at the lot lines and that indeed, in the past, there are cases where people take down an entire house and then do a resub. If the lots that are left, once you draw the lines, conform, that's all that we're looking at. You're allowed to take down houses or parts of houses in order to create lots that conform, provided the lots that we draw afterwards then meet the 7 criteria.
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Counsel, are you ready to answer the question as to whether there was any legal defect to the notice?
It's my opinion that notice was properly sent, and even if there's an issue with that, certainly after that there was actual notice. But in my view, the underlying notice of August 16th fully complies with our rules of procedure.
Okay.
And is that your opinion, even if they attach the wrong map to the back of the notice? Assuming, just hypothetically, that they sent
well,
out the notice and they put the wrong map on
by the wrong map, you mean the earlier, the
yes,
one originally.
The earlier map.
As opposed to something in Germantown or something.
No, but it's, that application no longer
whether
is
it's
active.
The earlier map or the map of Germantown, one or the other.
Why are we dealing with hypotheticals, though? This
because I want to clarify my question. Which is, you put the wrong map on the back of the notice.
The question is directed to counsel, so counsel should answer it.
The answer is yes, in my opinion, because there's no obligation under the rules that after the initial notice of an application that any subsequent notices be sent.
See, and this goes to the issue that I have.
Mr. Robinson, are you done?
I'm sorry.
It's a new application. It's a new applicant. It's a change in what's going to be done with the property. How could it possibly be a follow-on of the initial? I mean, to me, with all due regard to the staff, that's ludicrous.
When we have a change of property owner, which is not unheard of in the course of a disposition of a piece of land, it sometimes happens that there's a change of property owner. Do we treat that as a new application, or does the new property owner step in the shoes of the old one?
The new property owner steps in the shoes of the old one, and that change in ownership in no way triggers a requirement for a new notification.
What about the new property? Now, the question is it the same properties?
The board's, everybody had a chance to talk. Now the board is deliberating.
Is it exactly the same property, the same lots involved?
It is the same lots involved. The internal lot lines have been revised to meet Chapter 5029B2.
But the outer
perimeter.
The outer perimeter of this is the same as the outer perimeter of the prior one.
That is correct.
Board members, more questions?
No more questions. Motions? First I would say I think the notice was adequate.
Commissioner Wellington has the floor.
I think notice was inadequate with all due respect to legal counsel. In terms of what notice is meant to do, this notice did not do it. First of all, it's inadequate for two reasons. One, attaching the wrong map is misleading, and for anyone who was following it, it was, as far as they could know, the thing was not going anywhere. So it's almost worse than the no notice at all. But secondly, to me, it's not logical, it does not make sense to say this is not a new application. You've got a new applicant, you have a break in time, you have another notice that goes out, the language of which, when it refers to the original, is extremely confusing. And the fair thing to do is to notice it up and start over. Not treat it like a revision, give it a new case name.
Could staff remind us, is there any option for a deferral here? Does the applicant have to request that? Can somebody move that? How does that work?
Certainly the applicant can request a deferral in this case.
The applicant has to request a deferral.
But I take it if the position of the board were that this is a new case, then
it's not a deferral.
How can they they'd have to refile
and
start
over
again?
They'd have to refile. That's right.
I mean, a deferral wouldn't change. If the position of the board is that this is a new case, then it's a new case.
Well, they can defer now, and then they can either file a new case or stand on their old position.
If the notice is inadequate, we'd have to dismiss the case as not properly noted.
Well, let me direct the question to Commissioner Wellington. You've made the clearest statement that you believe notice was inadequate.
That's
well,
right.
What do you think the remedy is?
To vote the old plan down
or to encourage the applicant to ask for a deferral?
Ask for deferral and give new notice and start over.
Can we get clarity what she means by start over? Meaning file a new application? I'm sorry to be picky about this, but since we're kind of in the picky mode, what do you mean by start over?
Okay. Now, I'd be glad to be picky and talk about the picky thing. That's what's important. So here's what I think. What happens internally within our own process isn't that much of concern to me. I'm not asking you all to go take your papers away, go out the door, and come bring your papers back. No. Okay. What I am saying is whatever papers you've filed, this piece of paper that shows the lots and how you want to divide them, our staff should receive them and process them with a new case name, with notice going out, as our notice always does, and then reschedule it. That's all I'm saying. You guys don't have to call it a new name or do anything different. You handed your papers in. My concern is what our agency did when we got them.
All right. Now, you've heard one perspective, and I'd like to make my perspective.
And you will provide your perspective in 1 second. I just want to ask Michelle if... Is it legally procedurally possible to do what Commissioner Wellington just suggested?
If this is accepted as a new application, the applicant will be required to go through a new development review committee procedure. It will be required to send notice out again.
That's not what I understood her to say. I understood her to say that if the applicant asked for a deferral, she would then want us to send out all this new notice
to change
on the existing application.
Change the number and the name of the existing application.
Attach the accurate map.
That's a new application in your view, Michelle?
In my opinion, yes.
So we'd have to go back to square one.
I think so.
All right. Mr. Bryant?
I was just going to say that if we did that, we would be going back to square one, and we would be negating what our legal counsel has already said, that proper notice has been given. So that would negate that. It would also negate the process that's internal, that's part of our policies and procedures that have not been revised. Although, as I understand, you had a discussion this morning about the need to look at them. So I would say, why don't we consider this as something to be looked at as part of our reviewing our policies and procedures. But we have had innumerable cases where, in fact, there's been a change in the application ownership, and the applicant has stepped in the shoes and brought the same application forward.
We do it routinely. But it's not the same application.
Look, I'm going by what my legal counsel has said. My legal counsel has said that this is an appropriate application and it meets the guidelines. I've heard what you said, and I respect what you said. And I heard what Mr. Robinson said and respects what he said. But I'm also listening to my general counsel, my associate general counsel, and taking the merit of what she said as we usually do.
Well, listening to what you said, Commissioner Bryant, and I do respect it, maybe we don't have to reach whether we have legal notice or not, since possibly in the process of reviewing our rules. We can look at it more the way that the chairman suggested, which is as a matter of policy and equity, what's the fair and right thing to do here, and I say it's to renotice.
And I'm saying the fair and equitable thing to do is not to impose that on this application and to look at that as an issue as we consider that whole process.
So we have a disagreement.
Any other commissioners want to speak, or does anyone want to make a motion?
Well, I'll speak to, now I've heard all this, I'll speak to the notice issue. I think there's three levels of issues, which is, first of all, just from a practical point of view, was there practical notice? Well, I've got a stack of letters here that are about a half an inch high, and I think we've heard all the issues expressed, so I think there's been practical notice. Has there been legal notice under our precedent? Probably yes, although if you send the wrong map out, it certainly creates massive confusion about what's actually being noticed, in which case